something much larger. And it's really, I think, why I do what I do. And it's raising awareness around eating disorders for society at large,
mm-hmm.
and helping them see that, you know, eating disorders don't have a look, right? Mm-hmm. Thinking about the statistic, it's like in the high 90 percentages of those that have eating disorders are considered to be of normal weight, whatever the word normal means, mm-hmm. right?
Welcome to Behind the Bite, where we delve deep into the real life struggles and triumphs surrounding food, body, and weight. I'm Dr. Christina Castanini, a psychologist and certified eating disorder specialist, bringing you a unique blend of personal experience as a recovered individual with over 25 years of professional expertise. In each episode, we'll share the courageous journeys of individuals who have faced these challenges firsthand, alongside insights from dedicated professionals in the field. Whether you're seeking healing, inspiration, or simply a deeper understanding, this podcast is here to empower you on your own path to a better life. Join us as we explore stories of resilience, discuss the latest insights, and strive to foster a community of support and growth. Together, we can break down barriers, challenge stigma, and pave the way towards healing and living authentically. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to today's show. Always excited to be here. And today's discussion is really important, and I'm really excited to bring on our guest. Because, you know, oftentimes we really don't know what an eating disorder looks like. And so often men go under the radar. You know, they go slipping through the cracks without ever being seen. And in this episode, I'm joined by Eric Coven, who is a men's eating disorder recovery coach, advocate, and graduate student training to become an eating disorder therapist. He brings both professional insight and his lived experience to this conversation, offering a perspective that really, we don't hear nearly enough. I know I've had men on the podcast before, and I just can't say it enough that we just need to have more discussion, more awareness. And that's why, again, I'm so excited to have him on the show. So after struggling with an eating disorder for years, Eric found his way to recovery, and he now dedicates his work to helping other men do the same thing. He's the founder of Embracewear, host of Embracing You podcast, and is currently pursuing his counseling degree at St. Mary's University of Minnesota with a focus on supporting men and individuals in the LGBTQ plus community. Together, we're going to unpack the often overlooked reality of eating disorders in men, from the subtle ways they can show up in fitness culture to the dangerous normalization of behaviors like compulsive exercise, quote unquote, clean eating, and chasing the lean muscular ideal. We're also going to dive into how, you know, if you have an eating disorder, why so many men go undiagnosed, even by professionals, the impact that social media and unrealistic body standards have, what terms like bigorexia and muscle dysmorphia actually look like, and the role of environment in recovery and why that is so often overlooked. So this conversation, it's honest, validating, and deeply needed, especially if you've ever questioned whether you're, like to use this in our field, quote unquote, sick enough to deserve support, because that is something that I know a lot of people question in themselves. So if something in you has quietly been wondering, hey, is what I'm doing normal or is something off? This episode really is for you. So sit back, relax, and I'm going to go get Eric. All right. Well, Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you. How are you today?
You know what? It's been a morning. So thank you. And I've had some, you know, it took a minute for us to get here, but we're here. How are you doing?
I am doing good. Yeah, it's Friday, so can never complain on a Friday, but yeah, I'm doing pretty good overall. Very grateful to be here.
Yes, and we can hear each other and see each other. And for anyone who's ever done a podcast, it's sometimes technical stuff, but you know what? We're here. So I'm very excited to talk to you. I know you've been on the show before. So for anyone who doesn't know you, maybe just a, if you don't mind, a little bit of a brief overview of, you know, what you've been up to and where you're at right now with your career.
Yeah,
be great.
Absolutely. So my name is Eric Pothen. I live in Minnesota. I am a men's eating disorder recovery coach, and I am a current graduate student pursuing a degree in counseling to become an eating disorder therapist. I was really, you know, inspired to enter into this space by my own lived experience with an eating disorder. And after struggling for a number of years, I was so grateful to find recovery. And it really opened the door for me to be where I am today. And one thing I'm really passionate about in this space is raising awareness around the male experience living with eating disorders.
You know, that is so needed. And, you know, I just had Danny O'Connor on. He's, I don't know if you know him, but so grateful for men who come and speak out about eating disorders and bring awareness, because for so long, I think there was just this stigma, and maybe still is the stigma, that men don't have them. So thank you. Much needed for more men to come out and talk about eating disorders.
Yeah. And, you know, I actually am in the middle of reading his book right now. It's incredible. So I'm so glad that you had him on. I think his story is, you know, men need to hear more stories like that, especially athletes, right? I think that's another area that could also use some more attention, is really being able to talk about the prevalence and what the reality and what they actually look like within athletes, and how to differentiate between, you know, what is quote unquote typical behavior in that space and when does it turn disordered.
Exactly. Yeah, it's very confusing. There's this line that gets crossed. So, and even for people who aren't athletes, I think it's very confusing in our society, and even more so for men. So I'm just curious, for anyone who's like out there listening, who maybe is wondering if like they might have an eating disorder, they're struggling, like what can you give us some information about?
Yeah, as it relates to male eating disorders or just in general?
Well, in general and specific to males, because that, I mean, that's definitely your expertise here. So,
yeah. Yeah. I think in general, if you are ever just wondering if behaviors are maybe disordered, get curious about it. Chances are your gut is actually telling you something to listen to in that moment. And so I would encourage folks, lean into vulnerability, lean into safety, and lean into just stepping into that very unknown territory of having a conversation with someone about it. You know, I always think it can be really helpful to have a conversation with a friend first before speaking with a professional, right? Just to kind of work the muscles a little bit in that regard. And then I think from there, you know, hopefully you build up that the language, because I think sometimes it can be really challenging to how do you even communicate it to another individual. Mm-hmm. And then I think for men, particularly when it comes to, you know, things that I think they struggle with that are often missed is, so I think, you know, when it comes to individuals who maybe aren't sure if they have an eating disorder, I think it's really leaning into trusting your own intuition. If you're wondering, I wonder if maybe something is disordered, chances are it might be. And so really, you know, choosing to become curious in those moments. I know there are a bunch of fantastic resources out there, right? Like NIDA has their eating disorder screening on their website. And so tap into those resources that are out there. You know, we can't say that those screeners are going to be 100% accurate, but it could give you enough information for you to then dive into a conversation with your primary care provider or your therapist to, you know, really find a way into that space that feels maybe a little bit more natural, right? Saying you maybe have already completed the screener and you just want to have more conversation about it, which I know can take a lot of courage and vulnerability. I think that's honestly probably the hardest step in, you know, choosing to, you know, recover from your eating disorder, is asking and reaching out for help. And so just to anyone listening, I'm with you and the, you know, the challenges that that can bring up for you. But just know it is so worth it. It is so worth it to lean into that space of vulnerability and to choose yourself. I think for men in particular, a lot of symptoms are missed within men. And especially, I think, because we have this overlap between, you know, what is quote unquote a masculine behavior, right, within mm-hmm. society, such mm-hmm. as, you know, engaging in movement, being mindful of, you know, your body composition, right? For men, it's that lean, muscular ideal. But the extent that some men go to get to achieve that body type, you know, that's, I think, sometimes when we find ourselves dipping into the disordered behaviors part of, you know, compulsively exercising. You know, I think especially with men that we start to talk about muscle dysmorphia and bigorexia and just a lot of these behaviors that people don't really second guess because it just feels like a very normal behavior for men to be engaging in, going to the gym, getting strong, building muscle, because it fulfills this societal vision of what a man is and what a man looks like. So I think even primary care providers, I think about how many men go missed with mm-hmm. just their regular doctors. I don't think regular doctors are as informed as they should be when it comes to identifying males with eating disorders, especially as it kind of wraps up into this wellness, fitness realm and industry.
No, I totally agree with you. And, you know, you brought up a couple terms there that maybe people haven't heard before. So I'm wondering if you could kind of go into those a little bit because, you know, I know in our field, we know what these mean, but maybe other people are like, what is bigorexia? What is like muscle dysmorphia? Like, what are these things?
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel like I haven't heard of bigorexia until the last couple of years, actually, when I started to immerse myself more into this space. But, you know, really, it's a individual's desire, typically a man, but the desire for their muscles to be bigger. Mm. It's just this drive within that there's this disconnect between who they, you know, the size they want their muscles to be versus the size of the muscles they have. So it's just this need to get bigger, get bigger, get bigger, get bigger. You know, muscle dysmorphia is somewhat related to that, in which, you know, there is, however, with that, there's a difference in the perception in which they're seeing themselves in the mirror. So thinking about muscle size, they may think they have small muscles, but, you know, if you were looking at me and you say, oh no, he has like typical muscle size, or he has big muscles. So there's that disconnect once again of the way that they are viewing themselves in their muscles versus what the reality actually is. And so that it creates a lot of internal tension, which I think, and anxiety, which can lead to engaging in some of those disordered behaviors, right? Of compulsively exercising, over-exercising, being over-conscientious about protein and your macros. So just thinking about a lot of those things result in the anxiety that leads to the behavior.
Yeah, and I can see how that would be so confusing because, you know, I hear so many of the males, at least in my life too, is like, oh, I'm taking the creatine, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm stacking, I'm all these things. And like, at what point do you go, when do you cross the line to now it's a disorder, right? So like, what would you say to somebody out there listening going, am I crossing the line? Is it too much? Like, how do you know?
Yeah, I think one thing that I always like to think about too is, you know, what function are the behaviors serving? Mm-hmm. Right. Thinking about that. And another way that I like to approach that too is, you know, if you were to remove those behaviors, right, like let's say you didn't have access to your creatine or your protein, does that result in distress? Mm. And I think if you answer yes, if it results in some distress or some fear, get curious about that. Right. I think that's when we start to dip our toes into more of that disordered territory, when we remove that thing that's helped us feel comfortable, right? But now we feel uncomfortable. And that's exactly what eating disorder behaviors are. They're coping mechanisms to help us feel more safe in the moment. Mm-hmm. So these could really be helping them feel strong and secure about who they are as an individual, but remove it. And then they're like, well, I don't know who I am without these. So thinking about the role that they play in your life and what happens if you remove them.
Right. And so I'm curious, why do you think there's so much emphasis for men to like be like bigger, more muscular? Do you think there's like more of an influence on from like social media that's making this more prevalent? Or like, I would love to hear your take on this.
Mm-hmm. I think there are multiple things that are probably contributing to that kind of ideal image of a man being more muscular and built. You know, I think social media definitely plays a large role in that for sure, right? If you think about all of the male fitness influencers out there, you know, the men I work with actually in recovery coaching, they reference these fitness influencers that they see online, and they talk about this intense desire to achieve a body like this other individual, but they don't have the social media literacy skills to think, oh, this person could potentially be taking steroids and having their body be produced in that way. But they're creating videos of going to the gym 3 hours a day and lifting heavy. So I think there's just a lot of misinformation on social media as it pertains to men and, you know, the body that I think is desired within, you know, for men as well. But social media, absolutely. I think another thing too that I think would be helpful to also name is I think the role of sexuality in this as well. I identify as queer. And so within the gay community, body pressure is skyrocketed, right? The pressure to have your body look a certain way, you know, of being very much so like the other body size we were talking about, you know, just very muscle ripped, all of that. And so thinking about it's the way that bodies are viewed within that community, it's almost like a form of currency. And so thinking about, you know, how social hierarchies get created in that community based on how your body looks. So I also think there are some pressures that, you know, members of that community face as well. And I think just all of the different intersectionalities of identity can play a role in, you know, the way that we pursue a certain body type as well. But I definitely think social media as a whole probably plays one of the largest impacts or one of the largest roles on, I think, this ideal body.
Right. And so you said that, you know, having social media literacy. And so like, how do people get that? How do they become a little bit more aware and maybe have, I don't know, less, get less influenced by what's out there?
Mm-hmm. I think it's just pausing as you're viewing something and being able to like, take a step back and think critically about it, right? Of, okay, what is this person trying to sell me or advertise? Is this a realistic outcome from this product or whatever it is that they're selling us? You know, I think also recognizing too, and I think this is one of the biggest aha moments for some of the folks that I work with, but even sharing with them that I could eat the same diet as you for a month and our bodies would look very differently at the end of that month. So yeah. Thinking about it from that perspective too, same thing with a weightlifting plan, right? People are starting at different points, but they compare themselves of like, okay, this person is either A, maybe on steroids, or B, they've just been someone who's gone to the gym their entire life. But they're comparing to themselves as someone who hasn't gone to the gym their entire life or someone who doesn't use steroids themselves. So it's just, I think it's the comparison game, right? And I think society as a whole looks for such quick fixes where we're quick to believe, okay, follow this 30-day diet, lose 20 pounds. Okay, I'm sold. And I think that is really what I think people need to begin to be more conscientious about as they are consuming media online of, you know, asking those questions. Is this product real even? And thinking just about, the effects and reminding yourself all bodies are different. All bodies are different. They respond differently to different stimuli and whatever that may be, whether it's exercise, food, medication, mm-hmm. all of that. So just thinking just about the variability that these results could have. And it's not a one size fits all approach.
It's so hard though, because I know those ads, the influencers, they make it sound like it's so easy. And, you know, if you don't get these results, obviously, I think it's the same for women, right? Like, oh, if you're not getting the results, it's you. You're the failure. You're doing something wrong. Just try more, you know, try harder. It's so hard. Yeah. Right.
It is. But it comes back to, you know, being okay with being different in today's day and age, where I feel like, especially with society as a whole, we've kind of gone backwards in a way of, I feel like we really embraced individuality, you know, even 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But now I feel like we're all being forced back into fit this one size fits all mold. Mm-hmm. And it's a bad thing to be different.
Yeah.
It's a bad thing to be anything outside of the mainstream culture or the norm.
Right.
And so I think people are just having this very, once again, I feel like a very natural response to that by wanting to do the things that won't make them stand out, to be a part of mainstream culture, to not be ostracized for mm-hmm. the way that their body looks or the types of clothes that they're wearing. Mm-hmm. So I think that also plays a role into this as well.
Right. Do you have a solution?
I wish. Yeah. But I think it truly comes back to being okay, being different, mm-hmm. embracing your individuality. And it can be really challenging. But I don't know. For me, I always come back to my own personal values, the life that mm-hmm. I want to live. And so if I can ground my actions in my values, then I know I'm living a life worth living.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you and I both do similar work in helping people get to recovery, and we both have our own journeys to, you know, we got there. And I'm just curious, you know, I know we were talking a bit before we hit record about, like, you know, there's obviously treatment and there's all sorts of things, but there's also other factors that play into recovery. And so I kind of want to go down that path for a minute here, mm-hmm. because we're talking about what influences people to, you know, have an eating disorder. It's not just society and social media. There's lots of different factors. But also for recovery, there's a lot of factors. So I'm just curious, like, what you find is helpful for people, what helps support people, just mm-hmm. in the work you're doing.
Yeah. You know, in the work that I do with my recovery coaching clients, I think the thing that we tend to come back to most often mm-hmm. in our sessions is the environment in which mm-hmm. they are recovering. For folks, I mean, I don't think people fully realize just how important it is to have an immediate environment that's conducive to your own healing, mm-hmm. right? And to think about, you know, all of the external factors that can exist within our environment of the people. If you are living with other individuals, how are they interacting with you? How are they supporting you on your recovery journey? Are they being overbearing? Are they not supporting you enough? That's mm-hmm. part of your environment. You know, also mm-hmm. thinking about the physical space that you are recovering in. You know, is it clean? Is it cluttered? What does that clutter do for your mental health and your emotional state, and thinking about the effects that then that has on your recovery? But I really do think that I'm thinking Maslow's hierarchy of needs in a way, right? Like getting as basic as environment and shelter, thinking about that mm-hmm. environment also being, you know, do you have enough food on hand at mm-hmm. home to support you in your recovery? So thinking about accessibility too. Right. But I just think environment, it's something that is often overlooked, I think, but I think deserves a lot more time and attention when we're talking about people entering into recovery from their eating disorders and ways that we can help them be more successful in that space by thinking about something as simple as environment.
But I think it's huge. I mean, you know, eating disorders don't exist in a vacuum. And a lot of times the triggers that, you know, bring up these negative emotions or these thoughts or whatever you're trying to distract from or cope from or like whatever it is, numb out from, they're there. They're existing in your home, at your workplace, and your friendships, or just wherever you are. And you need to like acknowledge those and say, like, if they're still there and they're ever present, how are you going to manage those things, or how are you going to handle the triggers without turning to your eating disorder behaviors? And so they're huge.
Yes. Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head of what I think makes recovery so challenging for folks, you know, is especially for those that are, you know, transitioning out of higher levels of care, you know, going back into the home environment where you don't have the same structures of support like you did when you were, let's say, at a residential facility, right? You don't have that, you know, behavioral health technician there to have a conversation with at 2 a.m. if you're feeling really activated.
Right.
You don't have someone sitting by you at lunch being able to pull you aside and let's analyze what's coming up for you. And so I think, yeah, even approaching it from the opposite way of like, okay, wow, I don't have all those supports like I did. How do I continue to choose recovery? As you mentioned, we don't have the eating disorder to, you know, allow us to engage in those behaviors like we once did.
Right. And a lot of the times too, especially in a home, like some of what contributed to having an eating disorder exists in the home, whether it was messaging about food or how people eat or their comments about other people's bodies or weight or, you know, all sorts of different things. And so, though, you know, you're coming back to an environment, say from higher level of care, to other people still making those comments or still having their ideas about food, or maybe they're still dieting actively, or maybe they're still in an eating disorder and they are in denial about it or whatever is going on. And so coming back to that, that's extremely difficult.
And I think where all of the work lies is helping folks build awareness around what are those things that activate the eating disorder, right? If you're going back to your immediate home environment and thinking about, okay, well, first, awareness is everything. I'm a firm believer, right? If we're unaware, then we don't have the ability to create change or make a difference in our behaviors. And so that's where I always like to start with clients is, can you at least identify a number of things or just anything that might activate the eating disorder voice within your home, and having them just build that awareness. And then we think about, okay, once that event happens, how does the eating disorder normally respond? And getting curious about that, we work our way down the road. Ultimately, I think the goal is to be able to still be in your original environment, but in those moments of activation, it's being able to pause and say, oh, the eating disorder is present right now. It makes sense because Aunt Karen is talking about her keto diet that she's on. Of course, the eating disorder is going to get activated in those moments. So I just think it's really taking the time to name it when it's happening, because I think it's really the separating from the eating disorder in those moments and unblending and externalizing the eating disorder thought that can be the most beneficial, because that's when you say, that's not my thought anymore. That's the eating disorder's thought. So it allows yourself to go back online. But I think once again, we need to get really curious and to identify what those things are within the home environment or within our immediate environments, plural, right? We're not just at home all day, but if we're out to dinner and you see, you know, one of the things I can't stand at restaurants now is how they have calories on the menu. But how are you going to respond if you really want that this item on the menu, but it shows X amount of calories.
Mm-hmm.
So asking even some restaurants, you know, do you have a menu without the calories? I don't know if many do, but just thinking about ways that you can try to find some way to control the environment if it's mm-hmm. available.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of triggers out there and, you know, you're going to be challenged if your eating disorder voice is still really strong and has a hold on you. So I love that you said the awareness too, right? Mm-hmm. I think it gets harder though. If people make it personal to the person, like, oh, some comment about their body or their appearance. And like, then it's, I think that's harder. I don't know what you think about mm-hmm. that, but.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you want to share anything about your experience, but how did you handle like all the triggers while you were going through recovery?
That's a great question. I think, you know, for me, it was the biggest skill. It really was externalizing the eating disorder voice in that moment and trying mm-hmm. to find and make sense of why it was activated in that moment. I really think that was, and it still is for me as an individual. There are moments where, you know, I might hear something and it, you know, kind of activates something within me. Mm-hmm. But it's in that moment where I immediately know now to say, oh, that makes sense. That I'm feeling this way or the eating disorder is feeling that way because X happened. So I feel like really that was such a foundational skill for me that I learned in my own eating disorder recovery. And of course, there were times I wasn't successful at it.
Of course. Yeah.
So I think people think recovery, you have to be perfect at everything. Right. And it's one thing that we often have to, I'm sure you know too, reminding your clients of you're not going to be perfect at recovery. No one is perfect at recovery. And just reminding them too that as you take these steps, there will be moments you aren't able to engage in the recovery oriented action. And that's mm-hmm. okay. It's part of being in recovery. But yeah, I think for me, that was, like I said, that had to have been the most foundational skill that I feel like I developed in my own recovery of just naming yeah. it.
No, that's good to get the externalization of it. And I think that is very powerful to say like the eating disorder voice versus your voice. And I think initially it's so hard to differentiate. It's like, wait, that's my voice. Those are my thoughts. And yes. I think that's the hardest part to get over is like, wait, that's actually not your thought,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. And I think for me, it's recognizing, and this is where I think that's why I love incorporating some somatic work into this as well. Like what can you notice in your body when you're getting activated? Mm-hmm. And for me, it's like, okay, that's what makes the alarms go off. If I start to feel anxious out of nowhere, I'm going to get curious about that instead of mm-hmm. just letting the anxiety run its course. You know, really, I think recovery is all about breaking the cycle for mm-hmm. of a lot of behaviors. And I think that's one thing I've learned with anxiety is like pay attention when it surfaces and respond to it. Don't just let it continue to run its course without any sort of attention and recognizing I do have some control in a moment that might feel like is very out of my control. It's how mm-hmm. we respond. We have control over how we respond.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point you brought up. It's like the body is talking to you all the time. And instead of like wanting to numb out from anxiety is very uncomfortable in the body. And instead of going, nope, I want to push it away. I don't want to feel this. It's like saying, okay, why is this popping up right now? What is my body trying to alert me to or tell me or talk to me about? Because I think, yeah, that's another big thing is so many people are just so disconnected from their body. It's so uncomfortable. And so even feeling anything in their body or being present is very hard.
Mm-hmm. I would say, especially for those in eating disorder recovery, that sense of embodiment after, you know, being somewhat detached from it in a way, at least that was part of my journey was, you know, as I was restoring weight, I had to enter back. I feel like because cognitively, you know, I was becoming much in a much more healthier state, I came back into my body once I started to fuel my body. And it wasn't just two separate entities. And so as I started to notice and become back in my own body, instead of being so dissociated and detached all of the time, that was such a big learning curve and a big learning process for me of what is it like to be present and actually live in my body and trust it.
Yeah, that is scary for a lot of people, I think. But yeah, just, you know, especially because when I ask people, like, do you feel hungry? Do you feel full? And that's like so hard to regain for so long.
Right? Yeah. It's just leaning back into that trust with self. And, you know, for some folks, you know, it does take a while for hunger cues to come back after living with an eating disorder. And so it's really reminding yourself of, okay, I know I haven't eaten lunch yet and it's at my lunchtime. I'm not hungry. I'm still going to choose recovery and eat right now. But that can be so hard when you don't have those physiological cues that your body is giving you in that moment. And let's talk about kind of bringing it back to environment. If you are in an environment that is constantly activating your nervous system, that's going to even make it more challenging to figure out what is actually, you know, coming up for you in that moment outside of the anxiety, let's say, the stress, the, you know, sadness, fear. How can we tap into that?
Yeah. I mean, you're bringing up so many good things. I hope people listening, or maybe it's sparking some thoughts or some ideas for them, because, you know, and I think it's just validating that it is so hard to get to a place of, A, you brought up realizing you have maybe an eating disorder or just questioning that, and then going to the next step of asking for help. That's also very hard. And I know so many people who do try to open up to somebody and maybe they get a negative response or they get dismissed or they get told something that makes it worse. And that can, I hate hearing those things, right? So, you know, if anyone out there has had an experience like that, you know, I know the first thing might be like, oh, forget it. Like, maybe I don't have a problem. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm lazy. Maybe I'm this. I'm not trying hard enough or whatever. Or forget it. Nobody's going to believe me. I don't need help. I don't know if there's any words of wisdom for people out there who maybe are in that boat and they're like, oh my gosh, I don't even know what to do now.
Yeah. And it's one thing that I hear often from my clients too of, am I sick enough even to have an eating disorder?
Yeah.
And that just breaks my heart to hear every time that someone says that. And I think this gets to something much larger. And it's really, I think, why I do what I do. And it's raising awareness around eating disorders for society at large and helping them see that, you know, eating disorders don't have a look. Right. Thinking about the statistic, it's like in the high 90% of those that have eating disorders are considered to be of normal weight, whatever the word normal means. Right. And I think just really continuing to hit home that they do not have a specific look. So even if you are hearing from other individuals that they don't think you have an eating disorder or are struggling, you know, you. Part of recovery is learning to trust yourself again. And so and a way to reframe it is like you're getting a head start on that by choosing to maybe talk to another individual to get another opinion, right? Just because one person says it doesn't mean everyone's going to say it. I think our mind quickly jumps to those conclusions. But trust in yourself. If you feel like you're struggling, you deserve to find someone who will listen to listen and will take your concerns to heart and ask you questions, get curious, instead of immediately jumping to making assumptions and trying to tell you that you aren't struggling when deep down you know you are. So trust yourself that is going to help you get the help that you need.
No, well said. So that being said, I mean, I know you help a lot of people and you're amazing. So are you still open to helping new people if they need help? And if so, like, how can they find you and get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yes. I do still have some openings okay. right now for clients. I host all of my sessions virtually, so I can see anyone wherever. So my website is just www.ericpothan.com and, you can schedule free consultation calls. I host those for folks who are interested in just, they're curious learning more about coaching. And then I also do some advocacy work on social media as well, of continuing to raise awareness, really trying to bring attention to the male experience of living with an eating disorder. And so on Instagram, my handle is just at Eric Pothan. So keeping it really simple. But yes, it has been such a gift to be a coach. I didn't realize how long life had been pulling me in this direction. Really choosing to share my story just feels like opened these two big doors for me to enter into. And little did I know that it would lead me to becoming a recovery coach and choosing to leave a teaching career to go back to school to become an eating disorder therapist. And so life is just, it's a really crazy and beautiful journey at the same time, but such a gift to be walking alongside others and just being that support that I never really had in my own recovery.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you for taking this path. And I know, you know, we all end up here somehow and maybe didn't imagine, but I'm really grateful that, you know, you're doing all the advocacy and speaking out and bringing awareness because it's so needed. I think we need more voices because the other voices mm-hmm. are so much louder. So I don't know what we need to do to amplify it, but yeah. Keep trying. So,
yes.
But that's why I appreciate you coming on and, you know, sharing your wisdom. And again, I'll put everything about your contact information in the show notes. So anyone listening, go to his social media and get in contact. And any last final words before we end?
No, I don't think so. I think, well, yes, actually, I say that and then I say, oh yeah, maybe I do. You know, for those listening, especially if they are in, you know, the midst of their own recovery from an eating disorder, just know that there are so many people that want to surround you on this journey. Mm-hmm. If you feel like, you know, your pool of people to support you is very limited, there are a lot more people than you think. And lean into support. I know it can feel scary to, you know, ask for help and to say, I'm struggling, I need this support. But once again, this is your life. You deserve these things. You deserve to receive support. You deserve help. And so just know that you're so worth it and just keep walking the path forward. I know it feels really challenging, but I will tell you one day, maybe it'll probably be multiple days, you'll, you know, get to the other side of recovery and you'll look back and say, wow, I did that. And that is such an empowering feeling. And I also want to kind of rewind a little bit is you can also say that now where you're at on your recovery journey. You don't have to get to the end to say, wow, look how far I've come. You've come a long ways. You chose recovery. That's a huge, brave step that not everyone takes. So celebrate yourself, celebrate those wins, celebrate your choice for recovery.
No, I love that because people do get down on themselves like, oh, I'm not there yet, or, you know, I'm not doing it right, whatever right is. So I love that you said that because it's so true. Every step forward is a step forward. So,
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you again. And everybody go reach out to Eric. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening today. Behind the Bite podcast is created by me, Dr. Christina Castanini, as part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network and produced by the Tweaky Tales. I love hearing from my listeners. So if you like the show, please like, rate, and subscribe to it on whatever platform you're on. And for anyone who wants to understand their relationship with food better, or who might be wondering if they have an eating disorder, I have a free 9-week e-course at my website. Just go to www.behindthebitepodcast.com to get your free e-course today. Please note, this podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, clinical, or other professional information. If you want or need a professional, you should find one to work with who can address your individual needs and situation.